So listen, here's the deal. It's open lines, and I'm gonna close off only that one thread. Is we don't know what's in the Mueller report. Why don't you hold on to those thoughts until we find out what actually was in the Mueller report? Otherwise, you're just gonna be rehashing a lot of talking head radio and TV. I don't know. It's the middle of the night. Let's have more fun than that on a Friday. Where are you gonna take us? We'll find out next. In for George Norrie. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. The fun of open lines is we never know where you're going to go, which is why we start with Alan in Atlanta on Coast to Coast AM. Alan?
Hey, Ian. Wow, I'm first up. That's exciting.
The
Long time
pressure's on you.
listeners.
You're the leadoff hitter. You got to
Long
get on
time listeners.
base. You got to get this ball rolling.
Well, I'm going to try to. I'm a long time listener, 78th time caller, and certainly not up there with Barry. But
I
I have
love
two
that.
questions. The first one might be a yes or no, and the second one we'll see. The first one, did anybody ever find out what happened to that guy that flew into Area 51 live on air?
You know, this is a God's honest truth. I just listened to that entire phone call
Really?
Thursday, yesterday. I listened to the entire thing. I was going to play it for a class I teach. And so I went back and I listened to it because it's online, it's on YouTube. So it's the guy who flew his plane into Area 51, and he has the conversation with Art, and Art makes him verify at the beginning whether or not this was him. His girlfriend had sent over a fax or something like that and said, "My boyfriend's
Right.
just flying into." I mean, it's wonderfully set up. I don't think it's true.
Really?
No.
It was very well done. I'll give them that. And
It's
I do
amazing.
production work. I
Yeah.
was in radio. I've been in television, done conventions and stuff, and it was very, very well
It
done.
was so well done. And you know what? I cannot tell you definitively. I know Art didn't fake it. I know it wasn't a matter of like, but I don't think that it was anything. I don't think it really happened. I just think it was great theater of the year. And Art Bell went with it for the like it was like it's like a 9-minute phone call as this guy is flying around Area 51, and
Yeah.
it's such great radio, but I don't think it's true. I don't have anything
That's a
definitive to
shame.
tell
I
you. I'm
wish
not
it
gonna give.
was, you know?
Yeah, I know, me too. But so that's why I say that's my answer to, do we ever know what happened to the guy? I don't know, but
Yeah.
I, with a wink and a nudge, I'm not sure that there was a part two to that, but it was still great. It was just, and I just listened to it the other day.
Yeah, I love the Mueller band idea. That's just
Oh,
wonderful.
if I had a band name, it'd be called the Mueller Report. Yeah, that'd be
Yeah,
fun. Yeah.
my favorite genre is jazz collusion. So, it's all
Yeah, the
kind of ties
and the Weather Report was a great jazz band, jazz fusion
Oh,
band.
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Canadian blues.
Somebody else texted. No, they tweeted out, the Dead Sea Squirrels would be a great name for a band.
Oh, I like that too.
I thought that was awesome. Yeah.
So my second question is, I miss three things: green stamps, spontaneous human combustion, and due process. So let's talk about the important thing. Whatever happened to the good old days of spontaneous human combustion?
Wow, you were skipping over green stamps. I thought that's because I'm afraid I didn't explode myself just with all the glue I inhaled from licking the back of those green stamps that my parents brought home from the ANP just so we wouldn't have to pay for bicycles or a new guitar.
Are you a Northeasterner?
I grew up in just outside of Chicago when I was young, and that's that we had a green stamp redemption center in Evanston, and my God, they were everywhere. So yes, it was
It
crazy.
was like a Sears store, and you walked in, you got all the great lawn furniture and the grills and everything.
Yeah, it's really, if you really think about it, it's sort of an elaborate skee ball
Yeah.
arcade, you know, where you came in with a wheelbarrow full of
That's
tickets.
true, yes.
That's really all it was. But yeah,
And use
it
your
was a
ticket.
great supermarket promotion kind of a thing to get green stamps, that's for sure.
Yeah. What happened to people burning up in their chairs?
Yeah, I find that topic, and so there's really an ongoing debate still about whether or not that's true and whether or not it just happens to be a matter of people who have had certain physical problems where they off gas.
Right. That was the closest I had ever seen to an explanation. Yeah.
Or they had something that they had spilled on their clothing or something that was built into the couch they were sitting on. I still find it a very fascinating subject as well. It's been a long time. I wonder if it's happened recently and we just don't.
That was my other question was, has it even been, I haven't even noticed it ever being reported in it.
Yeah.
I don't know, 2 or 3 decades.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So that might tell you something right there. But I've never talked to a fire inspector. And maybe there's a thing about not reporting spontaneous human combustion. You know, like they often use different euphemistic terms for something. And then and there may be a reason why. I don't know. That's a great question. It's been a long time since I've heard one.
Maybe it was like an arson version of Jack the Ripper. You know, the guy just went and burned up bodies, not entire buildings. You know?
But it could also speak to
kind of thing.
To a period where they were spending a lot less time concerned about certain toxic glues and stuffings in armchairs.
Right,
and,
I remember that one, yeah.
Yeah, and so maybe it goes to show that spontaneous human combustion deteriorated as an ongoing, you know, story when greater regulation for home furniture increased or lead paint stopped being used or something like that. But that's a really good question.
A lot of them came from England, so I don't know, maybe it was in their diet or something.
It probably is. Bangers and mash.
It happened over there, you know.
Exactly. Thank you, Alan. That was fun. Appreciate it. Let me go to Richard, who's on the wild card line in Kentucky. On coast to coast. Oh, Richard's gone. How about Denise in New Jersey hanging on open line? Denise?
Yes, it's always great when you're on. I love hearing you. You're really incredible. My comment is going to be on your last guest. What a great guest he was. And three things. When I was 10 years old, I used to memorize everybody's license plate on our block and in our family. And I had, you know, everybody would come up to me and say, okay, what's Uncle Frank's? And I would, you know, spill out RB62Y or whatever it was. And secondly is later in life, I have a photo collection of Atlantic City. And when I go on a daily basis looking for pictures, I know which ones I have, and I have about 500,000 in my hard drive. So I know which ones I have and which ones I don't. And in addition, I have a band, and I've memorized all of the introductions to all of the tunes that I own. So do you think that that has some bearing on when I was 10, I was starting the memory thing?
Oh, totally. In fact, what's interesting is, so this is a non-judgmental question, okay?
Yeah.
But I've noticed some people who have that ability to memorize and have the inclination to memorize long lists of things may fall on somewhere on the highly functional end of the autism spectrum.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And so where, like we had my friend Charles Pellegrino on a couple of weeks ago, and talking to Charlie, it's always like this. He can't bring up just one thing. He has to bring up 10. And it just reminds me, and he has to go through them all because they kind of all come up in his head at the same time. And it kind of reminded me of kids I knew who were on, who probably were Asperger's or lightly Asperger's or highly functional on the autism spectrum. And they, if you ask them about one dinosaur, they had to tell you about 20. They had to just run through the list of dinosaurs. And they would say, well, yes, nothing like the pterodactyl, which is nothing like the pterodon, which is nothing like the, you know, and that. And so I wonder whether, does that chime with you at all on that?
Really hard to say. All I know is that my entire life I've been memorizing things that interest me.
Right. And if you don't if it doesn't interest you, you can't memorize it.
Exactly. Now, if you ask me if someone said to me, it's a matter of national security to memorize the last guy, what was the guy's license plate, I couldn't do it because it's not something that I'm interested in.
Right. No, I don't. What's the name of your band?
The band is called the Black Magic Swing Band in Atlantic City, Atlantic County, you know, in the state of New Jersey. We do the big band sound. And coincidentally, I have a radio show on the station that we're listening to every Sunday night.
Wonderful.
The big band sound. So,
well, yeah. What's the name of your Sunday night radio show?
It's called Swing is the Thing.
Fun. Well, yeah. Good. Well, if sometime play Big Noise from Winnetka for me, and I would appreciate it.
I'll do it this coming Sunday.
You're very sweet. Thank you. Appreciate that. Let me go to Ed, who's in Portland, along with my friend Matt Brandeber up there. Hey, Ed.
How you doing, Ian?
Good. You're on a wild card line, open lines. Where are you going to take us?
So all my life I've had like a psychic experience, you know, clairvoyant, clairaudient. Seeing, hear things, a lot of different things. I'd like to tell you about one of the most fascinating things that have happened to me.
Cool.
So I went on this incredible meditation journey, and I believe the Japanese call it meku, where you're supposed to get past the visions. So one night I was meditating, I kept seeing a friend of mine, a coworker. I looked at him, his whole left side of his body was drooping with dull pain. So I pushed it aside, kept coming back, I pushed it aside. So the next day I'm going to work, I went to work, and we're sitting across from each other on the patio. And I hear, tell him. And I'm thinking to myself, I've experienced this many times, I'm not telling him anything, and he's going to think I'm crazy.
Wait. So the voice came to you that said, tell him.
Tell him what happened, the vision I had.
Okay.
And so, no, I'm arguing with the voice, and it gets really firm, tell him. So I said, okay, I'll tell him. So I told him, well, last night I had a vision. Your whole left side, I pointed his left side of his body. The whole left side of your body is drooping, and it's a dull pain. And he goes, my goodness, I just came back from the doctor for that. They don't know what's going on.
Hmm.
I got this real dull, achy pain, and my body feels listless.
Hmm.
So as we're talking, this woman appears next to him. She's standing there. She's dressed in elemental. I guess, you know, like almost like a hippie dress, like they wore back in the 70s, like a sundress.
Like primary colors and that kind of thing?
Yeah, well, it was very muted and almost transparent, very like beige colors.
I see.
And so she looks at me and she smiles, and I look at her and I acknowledge her. So she turns and faces him. He's sitting facing me, and she's facing the side of his body. And she starts making these small circular motions with her hand.
Hmm.
So she's doing this. I'm talking to my buddy, explaining to him what's going on. And we're trying to figure out who she is. And after a while, she drops her hands, looks at me and smiles, and disappears. And when I looked at my buddy, his whole left side of his body just snapped back into place. And I looked at him and said, wow, your body just snapped. How do you feel? He goes, I feel great. The pain is gone. Many years later, I found a woman to teach me what that was and how to do it. And she refers to it, and I refer to it as light weaving. I know there's different terms for light weaving, but right now I utilize Reiki and light weaving as a healing form. And I had this vision many, many years ago, had no idea what it was.
And you use the term Reiki, which I'm familiar with. So it's like that?
No, not at all. So I learned Reiki many, many years ago. I got certified twice on it. It was one of those things I was very reluctant to do.
Right.
Reiki is a Japanese hands-on healing technique.
Right. I've been through it. I've had it done. Yeah.
Yeah, and the light weaving, because I utilize both forms. The light weaving is you just make small circular motions over the body to affect the energy. It's like it's energy healing.
Well, it's very interesting. So real quickly, I mean, Al, do you do that professionally, Reiki?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I work full time. I have to make a living, but this is something that I'm driven to do. Even at times, I'm very reluctant. But it's something I need to do.
Well, very good. Thanks for sharing that. Appreciate it. Brenda, east of the Rockies, in West Virginia, where we were just talking about West Virginia last Friday night on Coast to Coast. Brenda?
It was me, wasn't it?
Thank you.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a great story for you. It's a real paranormal story that happened in Morgantown, West Virginia in 1975, I think.
Okay.
And I have been listening Coast to Coast for 20 years, and I've never heard nothing like this one.
All right. I'm ready. Now, that's a tall, don't oversell it, but I'm ready. Go ahead.
It's a big one now.
All right. Here it comes.
Well, anybody can Google it because it's all over the internet, and it has been for many years.
Huh.
Anyway, I was in 11th grade back then, and I remember hearing something about it, and it's all written up in the newspaper, and the newspaper's at the WVU library. So it's about this story about this little boy. His name is Harry Spitz, S-P-I-T-Z. And he had a mother and a father, and they lived there in Morgantown. And he had this weird disease, and when he was about 3, he died. I can't remember what the disease was, but anyway, anybody wants to find out, they can read up on it. And so there's this cemetery there right close to town, right at the end of High Street, and all the people that lived around it, people house all around it, and these people heard an explosion one evening, or I don't know what part of the day it was, but they heard an explosion. They all go out to check it out, and they can't find nothing. They're all looking around and everything. They thought it was a gas explosion, and come to find out, they go to little Harry's grave, and this is a good one. I even talked to somebody that was there when it happened, because I write books, and I studied up on everything,
okay.
And I talked to the guy that worked at the cemetery and everything, but anyway, his vault that his casket was in kind of exploded, and it come out of the ground. It
wow.
raised up about 3 feet, and you could see a crack, under the sod and everything, that the vault had opened up from the inside out, like it blew out. And Harry Spitz had been buried for 60 years, about 60 years. And the freaky part was, when they opened it up, he looked like he did 60 years ago. So how
yeah.
cool is that, huh?
Yeah, well, sad, but yeah, cool at the same time.
Yeah.
You're right. And,
well,
and
when he died, they put his mother in a mental hospital. I don't know how long it was, but she had went to a mental hospital, and a friend of mine was like one of those nursing assistants, and she actually helped take care of her there. I found that out like much later. And she told me when she started to work there that they told her that once a year, they called her, they called Spitzy. They called her Spitzy, his mother. And they said her furniture in her room would change around. All the furniture would move around, change, like somebody could clean it and rearrange the furniture.
Sure.
It happened once a year, but nobody, of course, they don't do that in the hospital,
Right.
So
oh, that's fair.
She thought they was just kidding around, and while she was working there, it actually happened. Well, anyway, the WVU teachers at the college, the professors would go and talk to Harry once in a while because he was a genius. So they knew the kid and visited him quite often. And when this happened, they couldn't find no gas explosions. There's no tool marks on the ground. They did everything, and they couldn't figure out what happened because there was no proof of anything why this happened. And the couple of the funeral homes got together, and they reburied him and everything and put him back in the ground.
Hmm.
And so there's all kinds of stuff written on him over the years. And it's like I said, you can Google it and find all kinds of stuff about it. But
well, I appreciate that. That's very interesting.
Isn't that a strange story?
It is a strange story. And obviously, you've got enough data points in there along the way too, including the journalism piece. I'm sort of surprised that story hasn't popped up before. We haven't seen it on one of those ghost TV shows or something.
College, somebody is doing some podcast and they're working on one. They just did one about him.
About him. Okay,
yeah.
Good.
And they
okay.
just did an award-winning podcast, a 7-hour one, on the WVU co-eds that were beheaded in 1970. Two girls that was hitchhiking from a movie theater, and they've never found the heads. They found the bodies, but they never found their heads.
Well, that will have to reside in all of the listeners' nightmares for the rest of the night. But it was really interesting, and I appreciate that. And I love those kind of podcasts, too. I'm a big believer in true crime podcasts and the way in which they invigorate interest in stories, which otherwise people would just forget about. So I'm all for it. Thumbs up. In fact, that'll kind of reminds me about Lizzie Borden coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. Back to open lines. Richard was in Kentucky, but somehow was knocked off. Now he's back on a wild card line on Coast to Coast AM. Richard?
Hey, I'm back. Hey, Ian, it's nice to talk with you.
And you.
I want to talk about, I taught at U of L for 38 years, had a research lab there. And one of the things I found out was that if I had a problem that I hadn't encountered before, academic problem in writing a paper or something, putting things together, if I would just stuff my brain with everything and then just sit back and not think about it, right. Meditate, do biofeedback training, deep breathing, the answer would just, boom, pop into my head. It was kind of letting my conscious mind get out of the way so my subconscious mind could solve the problem.
I agree.
So,
I'm going to parallel that a little bit. I think that's the main purpose of prayer. So in it's to clear off. It's not. It's to wipe away the. It's to de-ice the antenna. You know. It's really what it is. And it's not about. To be able to clear away our own thoughts and our own preconceptions about what we must be doing and blah 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 blah. But I like what you're saying there, and I think that's good. What did you teach at the University of Louisville?
Well, I started teaching in 1977, and I taught stress management class, the weight management class. These were things that I was trained in. I didn't realize they were kind of new to that.
Yeah, really.
Area of Kentucky and the university there, so I just went and did it.
You are way ahead of the curve on that. And so are you now a professor emeritus now?
I am. I am now a professor emeritus. I had to quit teaching due to Parkinson's disease, but it hasn't slowed me down in some other areas, but I love putting stuff together. I love putting new stuff together. So
you still have a lot to offer. You have a lot to offer.
Elmer Green, have you ever have a chance to meet Elmer Green or Lace Green or
I haven't. But I know the names.
Well, they were the biofeedback researchers out there at the Menninger Foundation. And I had a chance to spend a day with them one time.
Oh, cool.
And I found it most interesting. But Elmer Green used that kind of technique. And so I got validation of it from him. But I think a lot of the meditators and folks have been talking about this for a long time.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. And it'll keep that Parkinson's away from getting too accustomed to being in your life. Richard, thank you.
I appreciate that.
Let me get to James. I had a couple of people who've been hanging on for a while. James is in Florida, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast. James?
Yes, sir. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Open lines.
Yes, sir. I was wanting to talk to you about temporal lobe epilepsy and ESP.
Okay. What do you know about it?
Back in 2005, I was diagnosed with temporal lobe epilepsy. And, this is three ways of getting it. You can get it by, you can either be born with it, have a brain disease and get it, or the third one would be an accident that would cause it to be, cause you to have it, like a head trauma.
Traumatic brain injury, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I've had this thing where I've always been able to feel like other people's feelings, like somebody's watching a sad movie and I'll be on my phone and next thing you know, I got tears in my eyes. Dreams. I've had some weird, crazy, crazy dreams that are like, seem like they're real.
Sure.
One of them was black eyed people. It was a man and a woman, and it's like I was there. They had this guy hanging upside down, and they had a duct tape over his mouth. It's like I was seeing through one of their eyes, like seeing through one of the people's eyes.
Well, what do you think this gift means? I mean, how do you make sense of it then?
From the research that I've done, from what I understand, about a month ago, I just started realizing what I have and related it to the epilepsy. And since I've understood it more, I can see things a little bit better.
Well, I like that idea.
The temporal lobe epilepsy is both sides of your temporal lobes is having seizures, and it kind of connects to the frontal lobe.
Right.
And it kind of enhances your perception.
Well, I appreciate you sharing the experience and also a little bit of research on that. I'm sure other people will be connecting to it. Let's find out. John is in Maui on Coast to Coast AM. He's west of the Rockies on Coast to Coast. John?
Hi. How are you this morning?
We're doing great.
Okay. I wanted to talk about your guest. I wanted to say, make a comment. I am 62 years old, and I can remember back when I was 60 years. And the family calls me the family encyclopedia. When I was young and my mother was cleaning house, she used to listen to the radio. And
right.
I believe that by listening to the radio instead of watching the TV, that your mind has to work.
I agree.
Has to absorb it. And by watching TV, you see it, but your mind goes into like a rest mode. You know what I?
It doesn't have to work so hard to understand what's happening because you're getting pictures with the audio. So yeah, your brain doesn't have to invent a missing piece. It's already presented to you, right?
And I used to hang around with the adults and listen to what they say and stuff. Why my cousins used to be out on the farm and raising hell and everything else. But my father always said, you know, there is a reason why God gave you two ears and one mouth. You know, you're supposed to listen twice as much as you speak.
Well, I don't think we can get much wiser than that, John. I think that's a good place to end, and I appreciate you saying that. Although I do want to, you know, hold up hellraisers. Just because somebody's out raising hell doesn't mean they're not doing God's work, too, at the same time. I'm just saying. We all need a little hellraising from time to time. Annie's in Alabama on Coast to Coast AM. Annie?
Thank you, Ian, for taking my call. This is a problem that afflicts millions of people. And when they hear this, they're going to be shocked. In 2005, I bought enough latex paint to paint my house, and I painted a shed. And
yes,
I still have enough left to paint my house. And soon after that, I found out I was allergic to latex because the gloves were giving me a rash. So
yeah.
I didn't know. It was so-called latex paint, and I've had it 14 years, and I just found out this week that it doesn't even contain any latex.
The paint doesn't.
Pardon?
Right. The paint doesn't contain any latex?
Doesn't contain any natural latex protein. It's a synthetic latex.
Yeah.
There needs to be billion-dollar lawsuits by people who have suffered and whose houses have been damaged. I can't afford to have all the so-called latex completely removed, mitigated, and start over with enamel paint. I did the numbers on that many times. It was going to cost me $20,000 to hire people to just get all the way down below the grain of the wood and just scrape.
I thought you said that you only painted the shed.
Yeah, I did. And then I found out after that I was allergic to latex. So
right. But I mean, at $20,000, can't you just build another shed if you had to?
I'm talking about my home.
Oh, but I thought you didn't paint the house.
Deterioration of my home. I couldn't afford. I crunched the numbers on what it would cost me to get rid of the so-called latex all the way down below the grain.
Okay.
Pay people just with a grinder to just grind half the house away to get rid of it. I mean, I was fixing to save my money up to do this.
Yeah.
There's people whose houses are just completely deteriorated because they're allergic to latex and they're not going to paint their house. They can't afford to start completely over and do all that. Well, we need to look this up and prove that this is not real latex, and people might be able to use this so-called latex paint, and they're actually thinking about renaming it acrylic paint because it's a misnomer.
Misnomer. Interesting. Well, very good. Thank you, Annie. Appreciate that. Interesting to see who you inspired. Maybe other people will be willing to pick up your fallen mantle on that battle. Drew is in Cincinnati on Coast to Coast AM for Open Lines. Drew?
Ian, how are you?
I couldn't be better. Thank you.
Thank you. Wow. I after listening to your last caller, I am a little shocked. God bless.
Well, we all have our problems.
You know how things do.
I do. I think the latex thing is interesting. I never realized how common a latex allergy is, and there's a lot of people that do have it.
So. I did not. Well, actually, to be fair, I didn't know that there is such a thing as a latex allergy. However, I never heard anything like that.
Okay.
With all due respect to
the lady, she's a very
kind lady. She's been obviously through a rough spot, and you know, all prayers, and may her and her family all be well.
But that wasn't why you called, Drew. So what was it? What was on your mind on Open Lines?
The initial call was, because I caught you, which I don't listen to you, which, please don't take that in a bad way.
That's all right.
I don't mean that.
Means you have a fulfilled life. I'm glad to hear it.
But you had a guest on who was talking about brain and how our brains work. And the primary purpose of my call, and I would love to talk to him, and I should read his book. I should get it at a library because, hello, people, libraries are free. You don't need to buy. But aromatic scent, smells.
Right.
And how they remind us of so many things in our brain and how our brain is associated with scents, aromas, smells.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And
not to mention aromatherapy, how many times we can benefit from certain smells.
You would be correct. That is why it exists, right? Aromatherapy exists because if we still smell something, it reminds us, it triggers in our brain memory of something in life that we remember from an aroma, a smell.
Yep. Yeah, it's why I always love the smell of pig farms. I associate that with very positive memories. I do. It bothers my wife. Is like, you know, she'll roll up the window and, you know, put her hand over her face and the whole bit. Nope.
Everyone else does.
It's a very positive smell. It just, for me, it brings back memories of the Midwest and driving. We used to drive on Sundays after church to go out to the only McDonald's that existed. It was about 10 miles from our house. And it was always worth driving out there to McDonald's, but we had to drive through pig farms, and it smelled great because I knew McDonald's was way there.
But goes to my point that we all have memories.
Yeah.
Smell memories that trigger things
in our
brain.
I agree. In fact, let me get to another caller here before the top of the hour, but I'll say every day I get up and I light lavender incense. I have a little incense dispenser off my desk, and I get up and I come here and I light my incense, and that's how I start my day, with that smell. It's kind of churchy for me, so it's a good mood brightener right out of the box. Tom's in the Bronx on Coast to Coast AM on a wild card line. Tom?
How are you? I like to say that the like
I'll start off that my genetically engineered vegetables, well, they're hideous and all. But here's something that could be done with science, or okay, that genetically engineered science. Did you ever hear of an ironwood tree?
Well, I've heard of an ironwood tree, but I don't know anything about it.
Anyway, I've seen them. There was one that, believe it or not, they're not numerous, as far as I know. It grows in the Bronx, and there's iron in the wood. I was thinking and there's also a glass tree, that grows. It's more like a bush.
And it has glass in it?
Yes, it has glass in it. Anyway, I would like to
I don't know about that. I'd be even surprised if the ironwood tree had iron in it.
No, it has iron in it. Because I've seen them. The seeds that come out of it, there's one that grows in the botanical gardens by a pond. And
okay.
They don't.
Are we talking iron like in like a balanced breakfast? You know, where it's like, you know, your daily dose of iron and niacin kind of iron? Or are we talking about like...
Well, I know it's iron in there, that's for sure. Somebody I know told me about it, too, that he actually took a chainsaw where he was. There was a town that said, if you can cut this tree down, we'll pay you X amount of dollars. He said, fine, that's easy. Then he learned that it actually took the chain...
But hold on a second. So I don't know this, but I mean, I would think ironwood was just a reference to being really strong wood.
No, it's like iron. Wood tree. There's iron
it's
in it.
It's really iron in it. There's
anyway,
real iron.
To make a long story short,
all right,
genetically, they may be able to take, I mean, just my theory, take this tree, and if they were able to have a regular farm of it, they could actually... have it grow, the tree would have all iron content in the bark.
All right, well, we'll have to leave it at that. And because I'm coming up at the top of the hour, then more open lines will give you the numbers next. On Coast to Coast AM, in for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett.